This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Terra Nova Earth Talks. We speak with cutting-edge experts and wise elders from across the globe on the issues and action our Earth is calling for. Brought to you by the Terra Nova Foundation, driving environmental change through human connection and collective action.
Welcome to Terra Nova Earth Talks. Today we go up close and personal with natural fibres. We look at what is natural and what is synthetic. I was asked earlier in the year at an international speakers event, please comment on natural versus synthetic. It was a wonderful question as it made me stop and think on the spot. How do I answer this? Many things darted through my brain in that hundredth of a second. There were so many ways to answer this. Do I start talking about clothes, interiors, industrial products, packages? There were so many options, but I landed on the most significant thing that came to mind, the consequences of when we choose one or other, the impact that extracting, making, using, and getting rid of each had. Overall, we of course urgently need to make less. Need I mention the overshoot day and massive over-consumerism across many countries in the world, including here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. But when we do make something, it is utterly critical we choose carefully how we make a product. We have decades and centuries worth of redress already required from making badly. So today's products have to be different. Or maybe we ought to be reflective and look to the past to see how we fared without synthetics. The word natural has been masterfully smudged by many companies, greenwashing their way into our shops, including the beauty industry, the health supplement industry, interiors and so on, where products are promoted as being natural. So let's be clear now. In this podcast, we are talking natural, as in from our Mother Earth, produced by nature without any human intervention. By contrast, synthetic, we are referring to those not extracted from Mother Earth but made by alternative means. Made by humans using different methods than those nature uses, sometimes mimicking nature, sometimes manipulating or altering nature, or with little or no reference to nature at all. Synthetics can also be called artificial. It can be said that synthetics allow for us to live comfortably, cheaply and conveniently at the price of pollution, ecosystem collapse, centuries of poisoned earth. That naturals are not good unless they are given nurture, ecosystem strengthening, regenerative attention and have people that value them enough that they will pay more and have less. Or is it that simple? I've dived into paper after paper, report after report on this topic over the years, and most point out that it's a grey area, that not all synthetic materials are bad and not all natural materials are good. But I think often the overarching, bigger picture issues are not weighted well in such reports. We are making products we simply do not need at the price of this earth. If we continue to do this, and worse still, with products that are highly likely to harm our earth, or we don't know the full extent of their harm, we are in for big, big trouble in the immediate future. Like many of the issues affecting humankind right now, we often make things overly complex to avoid our more fundamental responsibilities. If Earth could talk, what would she say? Well, today we have Ben Scales in the studio. He is the co-founder of Kiwi Fibre, a startup natural fibre composite materials company in Aotearoa, New Zealand, that is growing fast, but not in the traditional extractive way that most companies might. Ben, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Rose. Great to be here.
So a hefty topic we have here today, Ben. And I can't wait for you and to hear about the kiwi fibre journey. But before we dive into that, let's explore the natural versus synthetic debate with a couple of questions. So your company is in the natural fibre business. How would you define natural in contrast to synthetic?
Yeah, it's a big one to unpack because essentially it's not. I'm gonna start off and say something really controversial.
Go
synthetic fibers and synthetic materials aren't necessarily bad.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm saying that is because, sure, like we went for thousands of years without synthetic fibers, but we managed to achieve some pretty incredible things with synthetic fibers. We wouldn't have got to the moon without synthetic fibers.
Sure.
We wouldn't have done a lot of good stuff without them. We wouldn't have done a lot of bad stuff without them as humankind. And I don't necessarily think it's one is particularly better than the other, but the reason why synthetic materials is a detriment on the planet and on people, and the second one there is actually much harder to quantify. And one necessarily isn't better than the other. It's more that human incompetence and inefficiencies in the way that humans look at the world and purchase things, those inefficiencies make it so that we don't treat synthetic fibers properly because many of them are incredibly circular, but they just don't end up being circular.
Right.
Because it's a convenience product. It's thrown away.
Yeah.
It's gone. And in fact, one of these massive papers that I was reading, like all the ones that you were mentioning, was talking about the recycling of PET plastic and of it going into things like shirts and shoelaces and tennis rackets and things like that.
Yeah.
And that's actually the worst thing to do, that kind of reusing, because what that does is it takes that material, that matter, away from the incredibly circular process of plastic bottles, because you don't necessarily need incredible strength in a plastic bottle. It just needs to hold for an average lifespan of, I don't know, a few days. And then it can actually go back through the cycle a lot. But because humans are just terrible at a lot of things, that just doesn't end up happening. And it's exactly the same with all other kind of natural synthetic fibres.
Do you think then that that's – so it's not – because materials aren't good or bad. It's
about material selection.
It's how humans apply
exactly.
ourselves to them, right?
We need to design around that.
Yeah, and in reality rather than an aspiration, because I think sometimes things are aspirationally circular but never ever end up that way, like you said.
Like plastic bottles, perfect example of that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you also think that, though, we've kind of taken synthetic to the extreme? Because there's some things, and we've mentioned this on a podcast before, where we've used, for instance, synthetic fibers often in hospitals, right? Because there's
sterile. And, yeah, the whole perception of materials is a major player in consumer purchasing and in culturally. And so in cultures where and I'm a product designer by trade, and so I come to look at things from a designer's point of view, with material selection as being a major component of that. And something I learnt was that within cultures where different values are held in different stead, materials are held in similar proportion to that. And so cultures where like cleanliness and hygiene are imperative in that culture, plastics are thought of as a good thing because there's nothing more sterile than having something in a plastic bag in a hospital.
Especially when it's new. Yeah.
And so what that comes down to is that there's areas of the world, and not just geographically, but there's parts of the world, there's processes, there's places like hospitals and kitchens and things like that where synthetics need to be there. But there's also a vast amount of use cases where synthetics do not need to be used. Natural are so much better.
Yeah.
And that is what the world's starting to realize now. And that's that really brings life to a lot of these industries that are starting to sprout back up and really start to basically put really damaging industries to shame.
Yeah, it's quite, honestly, sometimes I walk into a shop and I struggle to even be in the shop because it's just full of synthetic stuff.
Yes.
And largely throwaway plastic or single-use plastic. And for products that don't need to be made out of it, And that's the bit that gets me, right?
Yeah.
Is we've got a whole massive shop, and sometimes they're huge shops, full of these materials.
Imagine that all are the just drums of crude oil that goes into them. But the sad thing is, most consumers wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a polyester t-shirt and a polyester cotton blend t-shirt and a cotton t-shirt.
No. Although but they have to be labelled, right? So it's yes. a pretty easy thing to
but look at. But then cotton, even though it's a natural fibre,
yeah.
actually can have its, I'd love to be able to quote the figures, but I don't have them, but I did have them once. A cotton t-shirt actually has just as bad, or can have just as bad of an environmental impact as a polyester t-shirt.
It
because
can.
Of the
yeah.
water input
yeah.
and because of the sprays that need to go yeah. onto the land, whereas a polyester t-shirt machine can pump out one after the other. You've got economies of scale that bring down the price and bring down the CO2 input.
Sure.
And what that goes to show is that there's a million ways to calculate, to compare synthetic and natural, and that makes it so complicated. And that's why things like end of life that aren't usually brought into the conversation or the equation when you're comparing the two of them needs to be. And so there's such a big picture there, and there's a lot there.
So this exactly. So and we sometimes dive right into the detail, right? But actually it's like, should we be buying, you know,
yes.
10 t-shirts, whatever they're made? Probably not. Should we buy one that lasts a long time? Should we buy one where we know where it's sourced from and from a cotton initiative that isn't full of chemicals and maybe even organic cotton? We have quite a few clothing manufacturers in New Zealand that do supply and get supplied with organic cotton, which is wonderful. And from social enterprises, I might add too. But we're not going to go into that today because that is a whole different.
yeah, we need clothing. To stay on track here.
Yeah. but what I do want to talk to, and this is where often what happens in these discussions, right? We start to focus on, oh, it's not so bad. And it's like, but the reality is, no. We our land and our waters are just chock-a-full of chemicals and pollutants from our synthetic materials that we just dump and get rid of and don't think of anything after we've used them. By contrast, and yes, I totally understand there are some not so good natural fibers, but by contrast, natural fibers are very easily decompostable most of the time.
That's what's important, because the easiest thing is to, the best, most effective thing is to just not purchase.
Yeah.
But that goes against human characteristics. Like, we want to buy stuff. Yeah, exactly. And that's a societal shift that will happen. But for now, again, you need to design around what humans are good and bad at. And so because humans are incapable of recycling properly and taking care of their products after they've been, you know, had their useful life, humans just don't do that. And they will. Like, my generation, the generation after, and a few smart ones from the previous generation are doing that. But it's a shift that's happening. But it's not happening fast enough.
Yeah, great.
But that's why we need to start going, okay, let's design around that. What are the problems here? How can they be solved? Natural answers a lot of those, which is why industries need to and are starting to shift.
Yeah, and that's a good point, right? So I think in recent times, people have very quickly gone to the synthetic option without even looking at a natural fiber.
Half the time they don't know it's there.
Often thinking it's just purely cheaper. So let's go for the quick synthetic version because it's going to be cheaper. We're going to make it faster.
Especially in well-established industries like the industry that I'm trying to disrupt.
Yeah, well, let's go there now.
All right.
Because I really want to hear, and I'm sure everyone else does too, is that let's talk about your journey with Kiwi Fiber. So tell us, how is this organized? What is it and how has it come about?
Well, I'm going to start with the problem that would resonate with a lot of listeners. So within New Zealand, boating is huge. Like, it's every, you know, it's every Kiwi's dream to have a boat and a batch kind of thing. And those boats are about 1.5 to 2 ton of pure fiberglass. And if you're like my granddad, he built boats. And he can't feel his fingers anymore because he's got so much fiberglass in his body.
Wow.
I'm going to jump back to the origins of it, but I'm going to rewind to about a year ago when we were starting to really, you know, get our hands on the material, understand the problem. And we spent time in fiberglass and carbon fiber manufacturing workshops. Some of them in Christchurch, some of them in Auckland, around the place. And I can only imagine how bad those would be in other countries. Because the health and safety to enforce around composites, carbon fiber, fiberglass, and the horrible resins that go into it, the health and safety is just not enforced because the fibers are so fine that the filters are way too expensive. So they just don't observe it. And so we've been in fiberglass workshops with people who can't smell anymore. These are like 60, 70-year-old guys that are fiberglass laborers that they can't smell anymore because the resins have just killed their not taste buds, what's the nose equivalent? They've just killed their sense of smell. They've got splinters of fiberglass all through their body, which then actually settles on your bones as like a white powder. Just awful stuff. And that's, I mentioned earlier that while we were chatting at the start about the human aspect of many of these industries, and that's one that's not even quantified. Like there's no statistics out there about the effects that fiberglass has on the body. If you Google, is fiberglass bad for you or is it bad for the environment, it says, oh no, it's silica sand. It's just sand that's been blasted with a lot of heat. And if you're using green energy, then it's completely sustainable. And in my company, we've got two swear words. We've got the S word and the F word in my company. The F word is flax, and we'll get into that. And the S word is sustainable because it's just overused. But we'll get into that. And so essentially, fiberglass is sustainable, but it's manipulating, like you mentioned in your introduction, it's manipulating a natural resource that's taking away from the ecosystems that we live and breathe. It's manipulating those with a ton of energy. And this is all done offshore. Like fiberglass is manufactured in China by the giga-newton, giga-kilogram kind of thing, the gigaton. It is absolutely huge volumes. And where are they getting that sand from? They are just taking it, blasting it with heaps of energy that's powered probably by, you know, probably not very green resources.
Well, yeah, for a start, it's a huge amount of energy.
Exactly. So. It's the huge amount of energy, full stop. And so it's manipulating resources. Secondly, carbon fiber is essentially made by drawing filaments of crude oil through a furnace at about 10,000 degrees so it carbonizes. And then it goes into a product as a fabric. So composite manufacturers essentially buy rolls of carbon fiber and fiberglass fabric made from either silica sand or oil drawn through a furnace, creating synthetic fabrics, which are then laid over molds, applied with a petrochemical resin. And then you have your boat. Then you have your skis. So there's no such thing as sustainable skiing, because you're skiing down a mountain that you've used diesel to get up there, and you're skiing down on little planks of either carbon fiber or fiberglass. There's nothing sustainable about that,
unless you've got your granddad's wooden skis.
Exactly. Or what we've just been producing down at the factory. So that's exactly the industry that we're changing. And so those materials go into landfill and they just don't break down. It's carbon, carbon fiber, carbon. It just doesn't break down. It's really carbon.
Yeah, and this is known for sure. The impact, I guess the thing, I mean, fiberglass is used for all sorts of things, but I guess the other point that you're making here is it's for a luxury good.
Yes.
So the damage is not for a hospital. It's for a luxury good.
Exactly.
Where we could have a choice.
Yes.
About what we use.
The wants, not needs.
Yeah.
And so that's what brings me in. That's more reference as well to the fact that synthetic has a place.
Yeah.
But so does natural, and it's been overlooked heavily, especially by the composites industry.
Yeah.
Carbon fiber is great. It's an incredible material. There's nothing that can match the strength.
Yeah.
Not even our stuff.
Yeah.
It just doesn't match the strength, like, hands down.
Yeah.
But there's a place for that.
Yeah.
You need to be building your NASA space stations out of carbon fiber. You just have to.
Yeah.
Those kind of things we're not going to be able to replace right now. But I'd say a good 90% of things that are made from carbon fiber are completely over-engineered with factors of safety way larger than they need to be.
Right.
And that is where the natural composites industry is coming into play.
Yeah.
So I'm going to jump back a few years now to when me and my co-founder were at university. We're in our second year and we were studying industrial product design, and we would looking at waste materials in a university paper. And our lecturer, who we've got a very good relationship with now because we are starting a business in his field of expertise, and he's one of the best in the world at it. But anyway, he said to us, boys, do you want a hard material or an easy material? And we're like, Tim, give us what you got. Throw anything at us. And he gave us some cabbage tree leaves or tikoka leaves.
Yeah.
And those are very common in New Zealand because those are the leaves that land in your back garden and you run over them with a lawnmower. And as soon as I tell that story, people go, oh, yes, I did that the other day. And it blunts your blades. And that was, we thought that was a problem. So we were like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to go around people's backyards and we're going to pick up all of these cabbage tree leaves and we're going to turn them into skateboards.
And just so you know, if you're not a Kiwi or in New Zealand, these leaves are very stringy.
Like, oh, yeah.
They're very
tough.
You cannot go over with a lawnmower.
No, they just get spat out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And lawnmowers have broken from
across the country. Pitch deck. Yeah. Our first pitch deck, the first slide was a lawnmower on fire. We're like, this is what happens when you run over a cabbage tree leaf. But so strong.
Yeah.
And we did a bit of digging into some academic research that had been done on them, and there was none. There was no research whatsoever done on the strength or the usability of these fibres. And so we had no idea how to extract these fibres, so we went down to the university workshop and we hit them with a hammer over and over, and we spent a few few hours doing that, and we're like, oh, this isn't very scalable. So then we started looking at my professor's research profile on the internet, and we found that he was a natural fiber composite PhD. And I'm like, what is a natural fiber composite? I knew composites are fiberglass and carbon fiber that my grandpa's boat's made out of, but I didn't know what a natural fiber composite was, but it kind of makes sense. Natural fibers in a composite. I'm like, well, this is cool. Did a bit of research, found that in the 2020 Formula One season, there's a team called McLaren that actually comes from New Zealand originally, Bruce McLaren, and they were starting to use linen, or what is actually flax fibres, in some of their car parts. And I thought, that's pretty cool because I like Formula One and I like natural fibres now. And I thought that was interesting. So engineering industries are starting to adopt natural fibres. How is that possible? So we were still hammering away on our cabbage tree leaves. We took them down to a natural fibre mill in Riverton in Invercargill at the bottom of New Zealand, which is near where my co-founder is from, William. And we went down there and we're like, hey, it's a museum that's operating Harakeke, or as Kiwis like to call it, flax. It's not flax, it's Harakeke. And we went down there and we said, Vaughan, do you think these cabbage tree leaves would go through your machine? And he's like, oh, boys, you boys are crazy. You're dreaming. What you should do is look into this Harakeke stuff. This is, oh, you call it flax. He's a flax miller. Like my grandpa started this mill back in 18 something or other. And you should look into this. The fibers are amazing. He told us the history about his family, how they were all flax millers. He told us about all of the towns throughout New Zealand that had these massive flax mills that were pumping out tons and tons of fibre a day. And it turns out it was New Zealand's major export between around the 1870s and the 1930s. Between that period, New Zealand, Harakeke, was New Zealand's major export. And I thought that was so cool. I wasn't taught that in schools, but we should be.
No.
And we went into ropes for boats and that went to be exported over to Europe. It was the best marine standard rope in the world.
Yeah.
They're also making wool packs out of it, which are now made of polyester and nylon. And then as soon as polyester and nylon were invented in the 40s and 50s and it came into New Zealand, then it was all over. Wow. Then the industry died and all the machinery that we really needed now just got turned into scrap metal.
Wow.
Which is a shame. So what we ended up doing was we just kept talking to people who had tried to revive the whole thing.
Mm.
And we spent a good 2 years at university between the idea being conceived and graduating, raising venture capital money and starting a startup in about the same week that happened last year. And in that 2 year period, we talked to people who had their lives ruined by fiberglass and carbon fiber.
Right. So you're getting the real contrast of two worlds. Yes.
We spent time talking to people who had tried to make composites and fabrics out of harakeke. We had talked to people who had been doing research on it. We'd been talking to people who had tried to do it, but then given up and started using European flax instead. We talked to boat builders, to ski makers, to all sorts of people. And we realised that we had a bit of a potential business model there. Why don't we start incentivising farmers who are crying out for all sorts of solutions in New Zealand at the moment and incentivise them to plant in a way on their marginal land and riparian zones and wetlands where they can provide me and my company with harakeke leaves or fibre. And then we turn that into a fabric somehow, and we're figuring out how to do that, and we've achieved a lot in the last couple of weeks. And then we can provide that to replace carbon fibre and fibreglass. And so that's essentially the business that we're building. So now we've got a pipeline of some really exciting customers across about seven industries who are demanding natural fibre replacements for carbon fibre and fibreglass.
Wow.
And they see the environmental benefit, they see the human benefit.
Yeah.
But there's actually a few things that natural fibres can do that synthetics can't.
Yeah.
So natural fibres are hollow compared to synthetic fibres, which are solid, which means that they absorb energy and dampen vibrations.
Yeah, right.
And we've had boat builders that we work with liken carbon fibre boats to like being inside a metal drum with an ape banging on the outside of it. And there's a lot of technical problems and environmental problems, and that's what we're solving.
Mm. And it's I think you need to do the one thing you've got to remember, because that stuck in my head when you told me that. There's one thing you have to remember, Rose, especially in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Yes.
That harakeke is not flax, right?
Absolutely not.
It's not even part of the family.
There's the flax family and there's the lily family. Completely different, not very related. Within the flax family, you've got linen, which is what I'm wearing right now, which is, that was from when I worked at a clothing company in Christchurch, and that was when I started first learning about natural fibres, and that was right in the middle of that two-year period.
We've mentioned that company before, actually, Untouched World, which you
fantastic company.
Worked at. You had an internship and then worked.
I had an internship there and then started working, and my job there was to start a zero waste project and try and improve their sustainability and innovation, which was really hard because they were incredibly good. But there was a lot that we ended up fixing. And so anyway, we've got the flax family, which has linen that's usually grown in France and Germany.
Mm.
And that's where you get your linseed oil. That's when you get your linen shirts, all that sort of thing, your linen cupboard. That is all good stuff, sure. Then you've got the lily family, which has harakeke, which Latin name is Formium tenax, which is known as flax in New Zealand. So when the Europeans arrived in New Zealand in the late 1800s, they were like, oh, this stuff kind of looks like
flax.
Looks like flax. Let's call it flax. And so it's been misnamed as flax, and that's my biggest pet peeve. But it's an education thing because so many people don't know what harakeke is. They go, is that the te reo name for flax? I'm like, well, No, it's its own thing.
It's a plant.
it's incredible. It's the plant of life in Te Ao Māori.
Yeah.
It produces fibre, gel, seed oil that then go into skincares and all that kind of thing.
Mm.
Absolutely incredible. And I'm 100% convinced it's going to change Aotearoa.
Yeah, and one of the things that I hadn't perhaps appreciated too was the merging between, a lot of things that we grow for production, we grow as plantations. And so just single plant or single tree, and that's it. But what I hadn't appreciated with harakeke is that you can have harakeke mixed with other plants. So it's like a...
It's when it's its happiest.
It's happy, right?
Yeah.
So you've now got a thriving ecosystem because it's now part of the ecosystem,
exactly,
which is native to New Zealand, as well as being able to use it as a product. Is that
exactly. It's a pretty incredible plant. So in order to keep it happy, it needs to be in a biodiverse environment with mm-hmm. other natives, other plants, along waterways, wetlands. It's pretty happy. It's drought-proof. Yeah. It's flood-proof. We've got some planting down near Lake Ellesmere, which is a really stuffed lake. it's like a couple of feet deep and it's just polluted.
Yeah.
And so we're working with a lot of farmers out there to try and restore that through harakeke. But essentially to keep it happy needs to be in a biodiverse environment. It also needs to be maintained.
Yeah.
And what maintenance looks like is by cutting away the outside leaves or the grandfather leaves or the tupuna and tereo leaves. And those are the outside leaves that need to be taken away.
Yeah.
And it's good for them to be taken away because then it allows the plant to grow and prosper and be healthier and more resilient to diseases and better and more effective in absorbing nitrates and contaminants from the soil.
Yeah.
And it needs to be maintained.
Yeah.
And so for us, that maintenance is the harvest.
Yeah.
And so what we do is we work with farmers to facilitate harvests three times a year. And each time you take away about six leaves each harvest, so 18 leaves from a mature plant per year.
Mm.
And
these are big plants.
These are big plants. They grow to be like 12 feet tall kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
about 4 meters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty massive.
Yeah.
And then what you can do is you can actually split up the, once they get to that age, you can actually split up the whānau of the plant and replant them.
Because you can split them, can't you?
Yeah.
So you can...
you can split them up and you can move them around and you can have more of them.
Yeah.
What other crop or plant, like whatever way you want to look at it, I think of it as like a restorative tool to help sustainable transition of land use.
Yeah.
Because especially in New Zealand, there's a lot of land that is just under processes that it just should not be under.
Yeah, where the ecosystems have been stripped.
Yes.
It's quite often people talk in terms of productive land, but I much prefer talking in terms of the strength of the ecosystem on a land, because often we're so monoculture focused and we just got to get out of that idea because it's
and when the land's not happy, it makes itself known.
Yeah.
And harakeke was monocultured in the old days when it was a massive industry. There were thousands of hectares just planted in rows of harakeke.
Yeah.
And we've just put up these, at the office, we've just put up these big photos on the wall of all these black and white pictures of how the industry used to be, and there's like trains going across bridges full up with leaves. But essentially it was a monoculture, and every time a disease swept through, the entire regions went into recession because they couldn't produce any harakeke fibre.
Yeah, right. Which often happens with other plants as well.
Yeah. And so biodiverse clusters, biodiversity actually can mitigate that and prevent spread and cure disease, as well as proper maintenance. And because back in the day, they just used to cut away the entire plant.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, right? So this is pure...
Plant it
once.
I know
sustainable is a wrecked word now, but
you've got to use it properly.
Exactly. You're taking enough, but you're not taking the whole plant. The other thing that I have noticed, because I have also planted some harakeke, is that it's an incredible place for invertebrates to lay eggs and to you know, catch. You know, there's lots of webs and all sorts of stickiness going on some of the internal leaves. Which,
yes.
So it's, in terms of an insect hotel, it's a cracking
it's
one.
It's 5-star.
It's 5-star, totally. But I want to just... move into the other part of this, where you're not just looking at a typical business growth model where you know, you've found your super plant and now you're going to take over the world with it. This is not how you're going, is it? You have been doing some interesting work to create collectives across Aotearoa New Zealand. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's an exciting part of it. So I think just trying to take over the world is a bit boring. Like, it's like we can do that, but we can do more than that. Yeah. We can do so much more than that. That's
more like an 80s movie, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we need a 2020s exactly. version. Yeah.
So this whole we're building a startup, but it's also a bit of a system. It's a really exciting system where we're working to plant, restoring biodiversity, restoring land. Then somebody's got to harvest that. Somebody's got to maintain that. Somebody's got to move the logistics around to move the plants to move the leaves to a place where it can be harvested, to be processed, to be combed, stripped, gilled, all this sort of thing.
Mm.
There's all these processes, and then it ends up as being a really high performance, high tech product. And so what we're doing is building a system that's going to be employing thousands of people from all the way planting and harvesting, all the way to people working on PhDs trying to maximize the strength of it.
Right.
And so one of the people that we ended up talking to during our discovery process while we were at uni was a guy called Mark. And so the way that we found him was because I saw on the back of a soap bottle a few years ago that there was harakeke extract in the soap that I was using. I was like, how the hell is this working? Like, what's going on here? Who's growing it?
Yeah.
How are they doing it? What's going on? So I got in contact with the directors of that company, and they put me on to this guy called Mark that we're now working with. And Mark had a company Mark bought a dairy farm in Wellsford, north of Auckland, got rid of the cows, planted natives, planted harakeke, planted manuka, kanuka, takoka, all of these beautiful native plants and mm-hmm. trees, and restored all of this land to this like beautiful biodiversity hub. And mm. it was just absolutely awesome. We went up and saw it, and he's got thousands of harakeke up there. And his company was extracting the seed oil and putting it into skincare and all those kind of products, and that was incredible. And so we've been talking to those guys for the last 20 years. It feels like 20 years, but it also feels like 20 minutes, 2 years or so.
Yeah.
And essentially what's come from that is there is now a Harakeke Community Alliance, which is established by Ngāti Ruapāni iwi in Hawke's Bay region.
Yeah.
Who are administering
this. Iwi is another name for a tribe. Yeah.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yeah. So essentially this is one of the only Māori-owned cooperatives that's administered by this particular iwi. Mm. And so what it's doing is bringing together all of the entities, all of the people who want to contribute to this kaupapa or this initiative to bring about and build a new harakeke industry. And so within this, there's iwi groups, community groups, Crown Research Institutes, private businesses, and startups like Kiwi Fiber. And so the cooperative that's going to come about from this is looking to be a similar structure and a similar size to Fonterra and Zespri, and there is absolutely no reason why that can't happen.
So
it's going
to
happen.
So dairy and kiwi fruit companies you're referring to there.
Yes, New Zealand's major industries.
Yeah.
And so Kiwi Fiber is a really proud member of this alliance to help build a cooperative to try and solve some of the world's biggest problems, employing thousands, tens of thousands of people eventually.
Yeah.
And just bring about huge change, all starting with natural fibers and natural seed oils and gels and all this kind of stuff. It's going to be a huge industry in New Zealand in 10 years' time.
Again. So it's not like it's even the first time. We're coming back again.
We're coming back. We did it once and we're going to do it again.
But this
better,
time having...
So much better. Yeah. Learning from the past, looking back and then...
And with that strength of a collective too, you know...
It's powerful.
What I'm hearing from you is it's not just about the...
This is bigger than just us.
Exploiting something for a product.
We're a tiny part of it.
Yeah. We're just the mere humans here for a bit. Yeah.
Yes.
And so everybody's contributing into every bit of that picture. It's not like, someone's taking something here and someone else is taking another bit here.
There's no taking. It's
everyone's
all giving.
Contributing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so therefore you get a nurtured ecosystem, if you like, a business ecosystem.
Yeah. Why
well
can't our economy be biodiverse?
Yeah. No.
You know, that's exactly what we're trying to bring in.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't that be good if our economy was actually reflected the biodiversity of our beautiful native flora and fauna? That would be cool.
Exactly.
I like that picture a lot.
There's a big vision here. It's super exciting.
Now, we're coming near the end, and thank you so much for that. It's such a beautiful journey so far. I can't wait to hear what comes next.
Let's do another one in another couple of months.
Yeah, it's moving fast, right? But what we on this podcast, we always want to get, if we can, people to give insight from your own experience, your expertise, on the actions people can take out there. So what would you consider people could do to help our earth and help our earth and therefore help us thrive at the same time?
I think awareness and education is going to be so important in trying to initiate some of these shifts to better decisions as consumers.
Mm.
And I think what we need to do is to just be a bit curious. Just be curious. Where do my clothes come from?
Yeah.
What are these materials that I'm using and the products that I'm buying and using and consuming and discarding?
Yeah.
What are the materials in it? Are they plastics? Are they composites? Are they natural fibers? Where do these natural fibers come from? Are they actually better? Go and do some research. It doesn't need to be particularly onerous, but just type in Google Scholar, PLA disposability in New Zealand, and you'll discover you'll discover that your coffee cups that you get to take away that say compostable on them are not.
Yeah.
I'm not going to dive into that because that's not what this podcast is about, but just understand the materials.
Asking questions.
Ask questions, be curious.
Yeah.
And
check
that's
the ingredients
how change
on
starts.
The back.
Check the ingredients on the back because you'll be surprised what's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, just be curious and go.
And go a bit beyond the kind of this is natural and turn it round.
Exactly.
And then see what the reality is, because some are amazing, but others... You have to get the very, strong magnifying glass to see the one natural product.
Yeah. Be curious and learn, because materials are actually really interesting.
Yeah. That's wonderful. And I think because it can be really noisy out there with information, so I guess it's being discerning. So,
especially when it all conflicts.
Yeah. And obviously if someone's trying to get you to buy something, they will push information. So it's to be able to step out of that, would you say, and say, let's just put everything to one side. What question do I actually have as opposed to what am I being told?
Yeah, and find what aspect of that is important to you. Is it the working conditions that your product was made in? Mm. Is it the materials? Is it where those materials come from?
Mm.
So just you don't have to be perfect, but just pick something to be curious about.
Yeah.
And just think about it.
And focus on that.
And yes.
So one of the things too is that people will be curious, of course, about kiwi fibre and about Harakeke. Where's a good place for them to find out about those two things?
Yeah, so our website has a lot of pretty pictures on it. It explains what we're all about. And
kiwifiber.com.
Yeah, and yeah. The R and the E, no matter what way you put them around, it still directs you to a proper website. So yeah, we're doing a lot of interesting stuff at the moment, and we're going to be doing a lot more interesting stuff to come through partnerships, through growing, through when we start really getting the KiwiFiber Foundation going. There's going to be all sorts of exciting stuff. So watch this space.
Great. And if somebody wants to contribute, maybe interested in the Alliance or in Harakeke as a plant,
just get in touch. We've got our email on the website, and we've got a form that you can fill out and just go, what I'm interested in, or even if it's just, you're doing a terrible job, tell me and tell me how to fix it. Because what we're doing is building something that hasn't been built before.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, don't whenever tell them to go faster. Yeah. No, that's not
whenever
helpful.
I get criticism, I'm like, please tell me, because I want to know how to do it better, because I've got no idea. I'm just making it up as I go along, and it's working.
Yeah, no,
so far.
So many times people give me ideas about what else I could do, and it's like, yeah, I've got quite a full plate right now.
Why don't
now.
You do it?
But really welcome people coming in saying what they would like to contribute to, you know?
And it really... makes your day sometimes when you get a really nice one. We get the odd handwritten letter from lovely old ladies who had their husband or father work in the flax industry and go, oh, this is lovely. And it's just like, oh, amazing.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's one of the things of, I like to say only if you need to buy something you love. You know, yeah. And there's an emotion in that, right?
Yeah.
And so if you do ask questions and you do find out about how something's made or where it's made or the origin of it, you send that adds to the love that
it's about
you
a story as well.
Something. Yeah. It is about the story, but a genuine story rather than a made up one, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
but this jersey, I love this jersey.
Yeah.
Not just because I got it from a company that I was working for where I've seen the people who made it and the machines, and it was the first one, actually, because this is a wear test.
Then
I got to keep it. And I don't just love it because of that, but I love it because I've made memories in it.
Yeah.
And it's got a story. It was made in Christchurch. I've made memories in it. I've had a lot of good days wearing this shirt. And, yeah, just embrace the story and... learn
feel
and
good.
Just feel good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If you love something, you feel good about it.
You do.
And you feel good about it every day. And I know some of the I go so far as to say anxiety some days where I'm having to use something that I don't want to use, you know, say something in a plastic bottle, for instance, or, it has a whole bunch of chemicals. But for whatever reason, I haven't got an alternative right now. And I don't like it. I don't want to use it. So it's a real kind of like, I have to use this. So by contrast to that, you've then got something that, you can breathe out, you know, this is cool.
Yeah.
I love this.
I felt guilty this morning because I live about probably a 4-kilometre commute from work.
Yeah.
I drove this morning. But you know why? I was on my bike last week and I got hit by a car.
Oh, no way.
So I've got my bikes and bits. I'm rebuilding it this afternoon. I'll be back on it soon.
Well, one of these days too, we're going to get, because we have...
No one's perfect.
No, but it is a good reference to a future podcast about the bikes and the incredible journey bikes are taking, especially in this city. Ōtautahi Christchurch is becoming a real cycle hub for not just cycling, but repairing and sharing and all sorts of stuff going on. So that's a future podcast to look forward to. Yeah, that would be a cracker. But let's. I want to finish up today just by saying a big thank you to you. KiwiFiber is a really fascinating, has a fascinating story. It's just a real reflection of the dedication and commitment you've made, you know, not just at university, but since, seeing it as an opportunity to actually do something that's good for Earth, or at least be trying to do something that's good for Earth, you know, even if it's, as you say, it's never going to be perfect.
If I employ one person or plant one Harakeke plant, I've made a net positive difference.
Yeah. So
that's a win.
Total win. Yeah. And that's That's a choice you've made, and that's not always easy to make. So big thank you to you and the work that you've been doing, and we wish you so well going forward. And a big thank you for being here in the studio today. Amazing contribution. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Terra Nova Earth Talks. For more information on the content and links from this podcast, go to the Terra Nova website. That's terranova.foundation. To listen to other interviews in this series, go to the Plains FM website. That's plainsfm.org.nz. Search for Terra Nova Earth Talks. Also on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Bye for now.